We have Han Solo, played by Harrison Ford.
The famous coat.
Yes. It is an amazing coat. I was like, all of the rebels should have taken a cue from Han Solo.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine if Darth Vader would have been coming down to the planet and saw everyone in these nice coats? You're like, hey, yeah, I think that's them.
Hello and welcome to the Art of Costume Blogcast. I'm Elizabeth Joy Glass.
And I am Darth Lord Spencerius. How's it going, Elizabeth?
It's going good. I love how you tried to speak or tried to sneak your lordship in there. Well, still doesn't count.
No, it counted this time. It's Darth. Come on. And I actually had to practice that one. That was a mouthful. Happy Coachella, Elizabeth. Were you at Coachella last week or this weekend?
Yeah, I went to Coachella, Spencer. You know me. I just got to go every single year.
Would you ever go? I feel like we should go next year.
I mean, I'm not opposed to going. I think it would really, really depend on who's playing, who's performing.
Okay. Like a Florence and the Machine, perhaps, or...
Like a Florence and the Machine, like Beyonce, I would go to that. Yeah, it would just depend. Like, I don't even know who was performing there this
Bad
year.
Bunny, perhaps? No.
I'm not a Bad Bunny fan. that is not my area of interest.
Well, I am, as you know, I have a very strong sense of FOMO with literally everything in life, even if I don't care about it. Like, I've never wanted to go to Coachella so bad in my life, and yeah, I'm just really suffering through that right now.
I also feel like that's the kind of event where it's like you can't worry about spending money. Like, if you're gonna like be worried about spending money, like, I feel like I wouldn't have as good of a time because it just looks so expensive.
Oh yeah, very much so. It's kind of out of this world, which brings us to this week's topic. We are starting our Star Wars month, our annual Star Wars month now.
Yes.
I'm so excited. I listened to last year's Star Wars episode, and that was a journey when we talked about A New Hope.
It was. That was a long episode. I looked at that and I was like, ooh, how is this going to fit into our shorter format? But we can do it. Well,
it's because George, be great. We had to deal with all of George Lucas's kookiness. We were kind of uncovering it for the first time. So we are mentally prepared this time for whatever nonsense comes out of your magic book.
Oh, I hope you're ready for it because it's somebody else's this time, not all George Lucas.
Right. And with so much information to cover, we felt like we needed a special co-host to help us get through all of this. She is a dear friend of mine, a costumer, a seamstress, just all around. She does everything cool in life, and I'm obsessed with her. Her name is Natalie Lucia. Welcome to the podcast.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Happy to be here.
So happy to have you here. You, I mean, one of the biggest Star Wars aficionados that I know. So when we were planning this episode, I just knew I had to reach out.
Well, I appreciate it.
Funny story. I actually ran into Natalie a couple weeks ago at a Return of the King screening.
I saw that. It looked like so much fun.
It really was. I just happened to look out on the lobby and go, Spencer?
I was like in full, like, incognito, wearing like a Guardians of the Galaxy hoodie with my large popcorn and Coke, trying to avoid eyes. And then I heard someone call my name with a bunch of elves and a potential hobbit in a corner. And I was like, whoa.
The fellowship was calling for you.
Yeah, honestly, it was one of the best nights of my life. It was so funny.
We laughed, we cheered, we cried. It was good times. And we all made it. Well, did all of us make it through the 4 hours and 20 minutes of that bathroom break? I don't know.
I had one bathroom break, which actually for me is an accomplishment because usually it's I mean, Super Mario Brothers. I had like three bathroom breaks. The movie was like an hour long. So it's a miracle.
Truly. So obviously you were dressed up as Arwen at this event. And I have to say, because Spencer sent me your Instagram profile and I went through and I was like, oh my goodness, you are so talented. Like, oh, your cosplay is all so on point. What made you get into cosplay and costumes to begin with?
It's kind of a long story, but I'll condense it. I went through a very bad breakup, and during the relationship, there were a lot of things that I had wanted to do. I wanted to go to my first convention. I wanted to go to Halloween Horror Nights, you know, things like that. And the person just wasn't into it. And so when it ended, I made the decision, I'm going to do all these things that I didn't get to do, you know, because of situation. And I just kind of jumped into it. So I went to my first convention. I bought, you know, like a Party City Daenerys costume to wear, and it's fine, like no shame on Party City costumes. But when I went to the con, you know, you see all these gorgeous costumes that people have spent months and, you know, years working on. And I was like, I want to get to that level.
Yeah.
Just for me personally, I really like having those finite details and really knowing the costume. Also, Party City costumes don't always necessarily fit you, you know, because they're not made.
Yeah.
Tailored. So I kind of jumped in. My first costume was Rey from The Force Awakens, and my grandmother helped me with it. I didn't really know how to sew. I could sew a button. I could, you know, fix a hem if necessary, but I didn't really know anything about other than that. And she kind of helped me learn how to gather, you know, how to set a hem and things. And then Rogue One came out and I wanted to be Jyn Erso, but I wanted to be a really good Jyn Erso. And my grandma was like, nope, can't help you. It's too advanced. And so I just kept jumping to find people who, you know, when I asked, how do you do this? What fabric is this? What skill is this? What technique? And just through that, I kind of grew as a seamstress and a costumer and kind of kept progressing. And the costumes that you're showing here, it's also funny because I learned completely different skills. Like for Cobb Vanth, I'd never done leather work, like with the spats. That's handmade saddle stitching that I had to do. It was over 35 hours of work to make them. It's Jeez. All leather. I'd never done that before. I was like, I want to learn how to do it. For Arwen, you know, there's no commercial patterns for her costume. There are some that are good, you know, fairly decent, but their simplicity, they're just the generic ones that aren't always going to follow the correct seam lines and things like that. So I reached out to other pattern costumers. No, I wish I knew about that. And just kind of, you know, jumped into my Lord of the Rings kick. And so I made most of Arwen's costumes. So like the green one, the red and blue, the blue one, and so on. And then just kind of, I jump around. As Spencer will tell you, like one day I'll be like, I really like that Harley Quinn costume. And the next day, I want to make a Padme.
I'm exhausted.
I want to make this
you.
One from Titanic. And that's just kind of how I got into it.
You are so talented, and I just always blown away. Natalie messages me all the time, be like, what do you think of this fabric on this jacket? I'm like, girl, I can't see shit. I don't know what kind of fabric that is, but good luck. You know, she's just so talented, has such an eye, and we're so excited to have you with us to break down.
Yeah,
I think probably one of the best Star Wars films, maybe right next to Rogue One. I don't know, but I'm so excited to get into it. Let's do it.
Yeah. Let's do it. And Spencer, do you want to start us off with your summary?
Sure. Okay. Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Princess Leia, and Chewbacca face attack by the Imperial forces and its AT-AT walkers on the ice planet Hoth. While Han and Leia escape in a Millennium Falcon, Luke travels to Dagobah in search of Yoda. Only with the Jedi Master's help will Luke survive when the dark side of the Force beckons him into the ultimate duel with Darth Vader. And that is The Empire Strikes Back.
That is The Empire Strikes Back. Spoilers from here on out. So I don't know how we could spoil anything for you. The movie's like 50 years old.
Yeah.
Came out in 1980. So what is that? 23 years.
40?
No, because Return of the Jedi is 40 this year. So since that came out before, it would be
30,
43.
Like 37?
You guys said there won't be any math involved in this episode, so
it is very old. But with that being said, let's go behind the wardrobe. So this time around, we have director Irvin Kershner, executive producer and writer George Lucas, producer Gary Kurtz, and of course, costume designer John Mallow, who you will know from A New Hope, for which he won an Oscar, Alien, The Empire Strikes Back, which we are reviewing today, Gandhi, which he won his second Oscar, and Chaplin, which he did with Ellen Mirajnik. So things were a little bit different this time around. George Lucas was not directing, and so Mallow had a little bit of a different experience. But production for Empire Strikes Back started in fall of 1978. Ralph McQuarrie and Joe Johnston were rehired and began creating the concept art for the Empire Strikes Back. Around the same time, Mallow was given the script, some early storyboards, and a binder of some of the costume concepts by McQuarrie and Johnston. After breaking down the script and creating some sketches of his own, Mallow set the preliminary budget at $205,000 to $277,000.
Interesting.
Doesn't sound like enough.
No, I would say not.
Nope.
Here we go again.
With a new director, there was a change in the atmosphere of the production that Mallow felt, and he said they were quite detail-oriented. I would show them sketches and samples, but it was quite a long, drawn-out process to get them to decide what they wanted. So Irvin and producer Gary Kurtz, they had quite a lot of say in the costumes and a lot of ideas, and they had more of like a drawn out process, and they like to see like samples. So it was a much more involved process for Mallow. He ended up finishing the costumes in July of 1979. And at that point, the overall production of The Empire Strikes Back was behind schedule and over budget.
Shocking. You know what it is? I think it's because A New Hope was such a production nightmare, with, you know, C-3PO falling apart and, you know, everything's breaking, and John Mallow was not even a costume designer at that point, and George Lucas was just like this nobody. Like, that was such a disaster. So then when it got to Empire Strikes Back and we're like, okay, you're a costume designer now. You have an Oscar. This is what we're looking for. I think everyone was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, we're on a real movie set this time.
Yeah. And it sounds like Irvin was just very, like, much more artistic about it than maybe George Lucas was. Mm-hmm. And, like, it sounds like he just took a lot longer to make decisions. This was the only Star Wars movie that he directed, and it was the last Star Wars movie that John Mallow designed. He did not design any after this.
Right. Well, I mean, he did the thing.
It's fascinating, though, that his designs carry over. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Pieces of it carry into Jedi and into, you know, Rogue One and all the other ones. So it's interesting.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a great point, because, I mean, you know, a lot of designers tend to do that, too, with, like, TV series or films. They love to, like, set the image, because, like you just said, I mean, we just watched The Mandalorian and you know, like Bad Batch, the cartoon, where we're still seeing designs that John Mallow created appearing now in 2023, and that's incredible, an accomplishment in itself. So,
and I think that particular, like, the overall Star Wars look, I think it's really like Mallow, Johnston, and McQuarrie, their overall vision of, like, the Star Wars world. I think it was just so well thought out between the two of them and documented, because they made so much art for these movies that I think there's just, like, an endless supply of inspiration for anybody making a Star Wars TV show or movie.
Yeah, for sure.
And with that, let's take a little break. And when we come back, we have about 1,000,002 costumes to talk about.
Yes.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Are you two ready to travel to my favorite planet, which is Hoth?
I guess sure. So. I'm not a fan of the cold, but...
Yeah, that's true. You would not do very well on Hoth. Me, on the other hand, it seems like a paradise.
It would be for you after the desert for all these years.
Right. Where it's currently like 88 degrees. So it sounds good to go there.
I'm sweating right now. So.
Well, I doubt the snow troopers of the Rebel Alliance are at all warm. Doesn't look it. And for the Rebel Snowtroopers, Mello said, the Rebel Snowtroopers uniforms are based on logic more than anything else. And this logic was not only a simple design choice, but it was also a very practical one. Johnston remembered Lucas wanted everything to look like it was secondhand, kind of thrown together, with several different looks among the troopers. However, for the practicality of manufacturing, they settled on a single design. And while the suits were designed to look warm, they were not. And producer Jim Bloom recalled wearing one of the suits as an extra, saying, the costumes were pretty thin. They were built to work in the studio, not to be out in minus 20 degree weather. The Norwegians were incredibly hardy, and they used to put their costumes on over whatever snow stuff they were already wearing. I know when I was dressed up as an extra, I looked more like the Michelin man than myself with all the layers.
That's brilliant.
Which I love these looks because it's different from what we've seen from the Rebels so far. And it's just kind of like a fresh blank palette to start the film.
But what's also interesting, I had mentioned I'd worked on a couple of these for people base and I for myself. They're made out of cotton. The outer, the long sleeved part, because there's three sections, the outer is just like a hoodie. It's got a hood and then it's lined cotton, which is not warm at all.
No.
I guess I never even thought of it before. I've seen, you know, this scene 1,000,000,000 times. And I guess, I know, I just always assumed it was like warm and everyone's having a good time. I, for some reason, just believed this scene wasn't possible of not being perfect in every sense of the form, but everyone's probably miserable. I never thought of it like that.
They were fairly warm. Amalo did buy everybody like really good waterproof shoes because he was like, that's like the easiest way to get a bunch of miserable actors out in like in Norway with wet feet. He was so he like kept their feet warm and dry, the rest not so much. And I was kind of confused by that quote at first. I was like, thin fabric, because like you see them out and it like looks bulky, but when he says like, oh, they were putting it over existing like snowsuits, it's like, oh, okay, that's where that like bulkiness comes from.
Right.
And you want to talk about just random, like, when was this movie made? Their snow goggles are like Olympic snow ski goggles from the 80s. So you can't really find them anymore. Really? And that's why they're all sold out and super pricey on eBay now. Because they also have those distinct color lenses, the yellow lens, which is also really difficult to come by. So that's why you don't see too much of these particular costumes, because a lot of the detail work. You know, they don't sell them anymore. If you can find them, it's considered vintage now and really overpriced.
This is why you're here, because I would never, ever come across that fact. This is fun already.
That's the kind of information you get from cosplayers, because they've already researched everything because they try to make it. Yeah.
And then the Greeblies have no purpose, like none at all, except to look decorative. All of those are like 3D printed for most people, because again, we don't know what they were. Sometimes we can look at things and be like, oh, that was taken from a camera, you know, or that was taken from a razor or whatever. Yeah. But these, as far as I know, no one's been able to identify what they actually are from. So everyone who has them now is like, that was 3D printed because we don't know what it was.
Yeah. I remember reading about that, like when we did the first movie, and like, they didn't even know what they were doing. They were just like, oh, let's stick this.
Nobody knows, but it's provocative. Oh, well, with that, we have to talk about our favorite leading lady, the incredible Princess Leia, played by Carrie Fisher, who we all love dearly.
Yes, this is one of her best looks ever. Truly. And it really is. Malo wanted to follow the same monochromatic color scheme that Leia had in the first film, but make it more like battle ready, giving her the snowsuit that she wears through most of the film. And after receiving the jumpsuit from Rocket Sport, a British ski wear company, Malo's team had to quite the job of breaking it down to look lived in and keeping it that way, as Rosemary Worth, Carrie Fisher's dresser, recalled, saying, "When the costume was washed in the evenings, I would have to recreate the breaking down pattern for the next day. I found it difficult at times to keep track of the continuity. Damage would happen in one scene, and then you'd have to reapply it for the next scene on another day."
Oh, no. Were they not doing multiples back then?
That's what I was going to say. It sounds like she only had one, which doesn't make sense. You'd think stunt doubles and, you know, in case anything happens, why not have maybe, I don't know, three? Well,
actually, I mean, multiples really weren't a big thing back in the day. It's kind of actually a more contemporary idea with films, you know, nowadays. Yeah. But
well, they were doing multiples on this film for other looks, but it didn't say in the book whether or not they had that many. It's from the way they were talking about it, it sounded like they were washing any ones they had every single day.
That's crazy.
And it would just come out in the wash.
Well, I mean, worth it. I mean, I love this look. It's definitely one of my all-time favorite Princess Leia looks, because I think she looks so battle ready is why I enjoy it, because it's you know, it has what we love about Princess Leia. She's beautiful, she's glamorous, but then she's also powerful and ready to like kick your ass in a moment's notice, you know? So,
and I have a fun detail note about this one, because I also made this one. If you look at her sleeve where she has the Greebly, the bigger square shape is a tape measuring thing. What do you call it? You know, where they measure. That's what that is. And they just painted it and like moved things around a little bit so it would look like that. I don't know what the other piece was. I know we identified it, but I can't remember. But I know the bigger piece is a tape measure.
That is so wild. This costume is made out of whatever was in John Malo's garage.
Right? Threw on whatever. And piping galore. Like, everywhere you look on this stupid thing, it's piping.
Yeah, but I think it is her best look. And like, for all the reasons you said, Spencer, like, it's beautiful. She's beautiful in it. And she's just ready to kick ass all the time.
The only thing I think is funny is, you know, they were rushing to escape Hoth, to escape the Empire. And she was very distinctly wearing those white shoes that you can see, the white boots. Or excuse me, not the white. She was wearing the gray boots. And then suddenly they're on the Millennium Falcon and she has white boots for the rest of the time. And I'm like, was she just keeping a spare set of boots on Han's ship just in case?
Stay ready so you don't have to get ready. She kept her boots with her. I don't understand why that's confusing. She definitely had shoes on the Falcon.
Moving on, another battle ready Skywalker. We have Luke. And while deciding Luke's first look, both Mukiri and Malo thought he needed to stand out from the other rebels. However, after talking with Lucas, it was decided that as part of the rebellion, Luke needed to dress like everyone else as he did at the end of the first film. To differentiate him, Malo had Luke wear the khaki vest of the rebel technicians over the snowsuit. And then his boots were modeled after those of the Canadian military and made by the London bootmaker Anello and David. Malo said, "We copied the design and made it a bit smarter. Ordinary Moloks would have been much rougher."
Okay, but you know, the interesting thing about that is that the trench troopers that we just were talking about wear the exact same shoes. I mean, there might be some small modifications, but here it sounds like Luke had special shoes, but they're the same.
It's there are shoes under like this wrapping part.
Right, yeah.
So I think they all had the same wrapping part, but I wish I put a picture of the shoes because they did look nice.
They're really fun
shoes.
They are
different. Yeah.
That's interesting. I was always interested by like the rag that was coming off of his goggles. Like as long as when I was a kid, I was like, he's such an interesting headpiece. I never quite understood it, but it's like so iconic to me. You know, when I see that, I'm like, oh, that's Luke Skywalker from Hoth. Like that's what stands out.
It looks more like he should be on the desert, right? Like he's going to wrap it around like Egypt or something.
Yeah.
Like Lawrence of Arabia or something.
Yeah, and maybe that is what they're going for. I never quite understood it, but somehow it makes sense at the same time. I just like accept it, you know?
It's just like a scarf, a little scarf, keep the wind out of your face.
And then the funny things about the gloves is you can't really find anything exact for that nowadays, but gardening gloves look exactly like that. So you just take that, you sand off the logos on the gardening gloves, and voila, you've got trench trooper and Luke Skywalker gloves.
Wow. Amazing.
I'm going to do that after this.
Somebody who had no interest in looking like he was a part of the Rebel Alliance. We have Han Solo, played by Harrison Ford.
The famous coat.
Yes. It is an amazing coat. I was like, all of the Rebels should have taken a cue from Han Solo. Like, he is a snappy dresser.
Oh my gosh, can you imagine that Darth Vader would have been coming down to the planet and saw everyone in these nice coats? You're like, yeah, I think that's them.
But like I was saying, unlike Luke's rebel regulation outfit, Malo gave Han a coat unique to his style while still adding elements like the greebly found on the other rebel uniforms. While brown in real life, the jacket appeared to be navy on film due to the film's color grading. And subsequently, toys and other merchandise depicting this look often made the coat navy.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, the infamous coat from hell. Everybody's like, it's brown, it's blue, it's brown. It's, I mean, coming to blows over the color of a coat. It's hilarious.
I thought that was so funny because I had always thought this was a brown coat. Like, I didn't know people thought this was anything other than brown till I was doing my research. And I was like, wait, hold on a second.
Honestly, I never thought of it until like this morning, I guess. So I'm kind of jealous I wasn't in on this controversy before today.
What I also find interesting, just because you have this picture up, is his rank badge is the same as Leia's.
I think Leia was playing favorite.
So they ranked them the same. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I'm familiar with his costumes, but I don't know them as well. So just seeing that, I'm like, oh, I did not know that. And also the fact that he wears his holster and belt outside of the jacket. It's smart. Got to be able to reach the blaster.
Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. Yeah,
that's
he knows cool. how to keep himself alive, and it's having the blaster ready.
Right.
And then
dun, dun, dun.
We have the Wampa, which I could not find much information about the Wampa.
He's been forgotten.
He's been absolutely forgotten.
Justice for the Wampa.
Yes. But according to StarWars.com, there have been two life-size Wampa suits were made for both the first version of The Empire Strikes Back and the special edition. Des Webb donned the outfit first, but because the costume was so heavy and cumbersome, he had trouble with overheating. For the special edition, Howie Weed came up with a new design for the suit and shot fresh footage that was mixed with the original scenes from the film.
That is so crazy. I can't believe they did that. I am a big fan of the Wampas. Like, I remember being as a kid thinking this was like the scariest scene in a movie I've ever seen. I just, every single time I've like got to look away. But seeing pictures of the suit, of how massively tall it was, I mean, we need to find, I hope these aren't sitting in someone's garage somewhere or I will scream.
They probably are.
Yeah. I mean, in the picture we're looking at, there's the dude holding the Wampa's arm and he's half the size of the Wampa. So how tall is it? You know, he's at least 10, 11 feet tall.
That's huge.
Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand the construction. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, like, I understand, like, because it's part puppet, part wearable costume. But like, I just always assumed it was like a full like puppet, like that there was someone like behind the scenes, not in the suit.
It's so funny that Natalie mentioned the man holding the arm, because I didn't realize that was a man, and now it looks even more ridiculous. It's like,
what did you think it was?
My eyes are playing tricks on me. There's like this, I think it's like a... It's like a little thing holding onto this big suit. And now I'm like, oh, that's a person. You know?
Yeah.
It's so big.
Yeah. I mean, look at his hand. His hand is holding the Wampa's like paw. And the paw itself is like, what, four times bigger than the guy's hand? It's crazy.
Oh, yeah. This thing, like,
that's amazing.
I would not have thought this was such like a large piece, because you just think like, oh, it's like the 70s. It was probably like smaller. They just made it look huge.
Yeah.
It's like, no, it's just huge.
You mean it wasn't forced perspective?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, it's a Lord of the Rings trick or something. Wow, that's great.
What was not ever forced perspective was the Imperial Snowtroopers, which I always thought these guys looked so cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Imperial Snowtroopers were simply supposed to be stormtroopers outfitted for snow. However, Johnson and McQuarrie had a lot of ideas and a lot of direction from George Lucas. Johnson recalled a very specific reference Lucas made, saying, "When George began working on the snow battle, he showed me an Eisenstein film called Alexander Nevsky. In his invasion scene, where you see a huge Russian army coming across the plains, he really liked the idea that you saw these things coming in and you didn't know what they were yet." Lucas also wanted the snowtroopers to have a samurai feel about them. And Johnson said he didn't want it to look Japanese. He just wanted it to have that multi-layered look. By the time McQuarrie and Johnson finished the concept art, all John Mallow had to do was make very few practical changes to bring these illustrations to life.
I love that. And, you know, we talked about this before, but, you know, John Mallow and George Lucas, Ridley Scott, they were all super inspired by samurais at this time. You know, we see that in Alien, we see that in the first Star Wars film. They were talking about doing it for the Dune movie that they never made. So it's I can't believe that this trend is still continuing into Empire Strikes Back. I mean, it's super cool. They are like the coolest to me stormtroopers besides the Praetorian Guards, which we just saw in The Mandalorian. So yeah, super exciting costumes.
I know people who have these costumes and they love them, one, because of how iconic they look, but also because you can sit down. You can't sit down when you're wearing stormtrooper armor. So
well,
they
that's
love
a big one,
wearing
yeah.
that one. Yeah, you can't really do much in a TK, but it looks cool though. And the visibility, believe it or not, in these particular helmets is actually really good, just because of the placement of where the eyes are. So, you know, you get to sit, you can see better, and you look cool. I love these.
Look, I'm a big fan of any armor that you could sit down in. So that's a big plus to me.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about pockets later, but sitting down is step one, you know?
Absolutely. And I love just because, like, you know, you're expecting, like, oh, it's the Empire that we're like the stormtroopers are about to come in. And then something like almost scarier than a stormtrooper comes in, like zero facial features, just like this white mass.
Like they don't even have mouths. You. They have no mouths.
And it's like, yeah, they have little like slits to look out of, but like I would not call those eyes.
Yeah,
that's definitely scary. I also love how quick the Empire was able to throw these licks together. You know, it was just like, you know, remember they're like Darth Vader, I think they're there. And he's like, yeah, that's them. Send the troops down. And they had this entire wintry wardrobe all set, ready to go, which I love. He's ready. He also stays ready so they don't have to get ready.
Yeah, they're the Empire. They probably Imperial have a look tailors. For every occasion. Yeah, exactly. Yes.
They had someone like Natalie on board and they're like, yo, we need a bunch of white, wintry, scary armor suits.
On it. Oh, yeah. But what's also funny is the little like jacket cape thing that looks like a skirt that you can see in the back of their costumes. That's just made of like polar fleece.
Oh,
like
ooh, that sounds cozy.
Yeah, it's so funny. Like people go, look, can you make me this? I'm like, yeah, what's it made of? Oh, the fleece that they sell at Joann's. Yeah. Like, oh, okay.
Not shocked about this, actually.
Yeah, I can make that.
And with that, we are leaving Hoth, and taking a break.
But we're going to Dagobah after this, so
time for a swamp.
Time for insects and mosquitoes, because that's what's happening now, right? They're gonna come out again, little bastards.
We'll be right back.
What's up, costume nerds? This is Spencer, co-host and producer of the Art of Costume blogcast. I love the simple things in life: free parking, air conditioning, and a nice comfortable hoodie. If you feel the same way, then I'm here to let you know that if you wanted to support our show, you can head over to theartofcostume.com/podstore. There you can buy awesome blogcast merch through TeePublic, such as t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, and stickers. We even have a baby onesie for all those baby costume designers out there. To get your merch, head over to theartofcostume.com/podstore. Thank you for all your support. Are you guys ready to get back into Empire Strikes Back?
Yes.
Part two.
Because we have a quick glance at some really interesting bounty hunters, which I always love the scene. They're always so creepy. We see, I believe his name is Bosk, right? Yep. In that yellow suit. Always, I loved how long his arms were. I had like a Bosk doll back in the day. That was super fun. And we get our first look at the IG model and Boba Fett, which, I mean, talking about icons, right?
Okay, but also, I didn't know this, but okay, so if you look at Bosk for a second, he's wearing a white flak vest, which is what the X-Wing pilots wear, which I find interesting. And then his belt is an X-Wing pilot's belt, and so is that silver belt, too. So they just repurposed probably pieces from the X-Wing pilot costume.
Yeah. Or he went to like the thrift store and found it. You know.
Yeah. Or he took one out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He captured one and was like, I really like this best.
More importantly, we have a Han Solo outside of his Hoth coat. And for Han, they really wanted to maintain his independent nature from the first film. So Mala decided to keep the overall Han aesthetic the same, changing it up only bits and pieces here. The red stripe on his pants is now a bunch of like little yellow horizontal stripes, a new style of white shirt, And the jacket just mimics the style of the vest he had in the first film.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess I never put it together, but it is like very echo of what he wore in the first film. I love the wrap of the white shirt.
I love it too. And it's just like, it's a more like, it's less like scoundrel Han and more like responsible Han.
Grown up.
Yeah, he's grown up. He has things to fight for now.
But he's still,
even if he says he doesn't.
He is still kind of like the bad boy Han, though. He still has his cool like hot pants, you know, but he is a little bit more grown up.
His hot pants. Harrison Ford in some hot pants.
Yes.
I'm here for it.
Yes. But I particularly like the shirt on this one, especially because, like, obviously there are no fasteners shown in Star Wars. And I just think, I find it fascinating how they made this kind of shirt without showing fasteners. Like, I know it's simple, but it's just like, when you look at it, I'm like, that's just cool. Like, it's just so clean looking, when in real life, like, it would probably have like a million buttons up the front of it.
Right. But yeah, no, it's a good point. Like, you look at it and it's something so simple, but just rewiring your brain to be like, well, there can't be any fasteners on this. How do we do this? And you're like, oh, I don't know. Velcro? Or it's just hidden, you know?
They just used Velcro and everything.
Most of the time they're snaps or hook and eyes. Yeah.
Who didn't need a ton of hidden fasteners? We have Lando Calrissian, played by Billy Dee Williams.
Yes.
One of my favorite characters. For Bespin, they had almost endless possibilities. Mallow produced more sketches for the inhabitants of Bespin and the Cloud City than for anything else on the films. While many different looks were discussed for Lando, a simple design was considered best. However, a over-the-top cloak left the flashy personality of Lando come through. It's made of a blue felt and is lined with the reverse side of a dragon printed silk.
Wow, interesting.
I would not have guessed.
Yeah, it doesn't look like felt.
It does not look like felt. And I thought this was just like a silk, like paisley pattern. So I was like, it's the 70s. Paisley's all over the place. Right.
I always loved a cloak. You know how I feel about a good cloak or a cape. But what makes it so like flashy in Lando is that collar. To me, it's giving like almost like a Dracula type collar you would see in like a Party City cape, which makes it so fun to me. It's kind of campy, and Billy Dee Williams gives it such a style with that cloak. Definitely one of my favorites too.
But also, he just like his swagger. Whenever you're putting a cloak on, you have a different way of walking so that it flows.
Yeah.
And he does such a good job wearing this costume. You know how they always have that saying that like some people wear the costume, but sometimes the costume wears you. He wears it. Like, he owns this costume.
Yes.
There's nothing been said more true on this podcast.
Nope. He wears that costume. I especially love like the stills. Just from the screen test where like you can tell he's like loving this cave.
Yeah. I just want to know what music was playing in the background when they were shooting these.
Right.
Something very fun. But I do love how you mentioned John Mallow doing a lot more sketches for the Cloud City, because to me that is like pinnacle John Mallow too. That kind of, you know, we talked about Alien last year and that kind of futuristic but not science fiction look, to me that really stands out on a Cloud City where it, you could tell that's not, this isn't the 80s, but it's also not like super high tech science fiction either, which I think is John Mallow's kind of like signature costuming.
Yeah, I agree. It was also like, this was the first time they were introducing like a whole new culture within the three films. So they were like, we have a whole new like cast of people to like play with. So they really just went for it. Another look from the Cloud City is Leia's dinner outfit.
Such a good one.
And it's such a good one. And Lucas imagined Bespin to kind of have like an Art Deco aesthetic. And it is clearly shown in the new outfit Leia is given. Since this costume was a departure from the color scheme and style we're used to seeing Leia in, Mala had a hard time deciding what the look should be. He said, in a film like this, you can go in any direction provided it works in the end. After much discussion, we decided Leia's dinner dress should have a slightly Indian look. We wanted it sort of soft and simple. The look was created by an independent shop, Spaghetti Limited, in London.
Nice.
And many hours went into the hand-embroidered cloak. By the end of it, Mala said the look was the closest we ever got to a spacey costume.
Interesting. You know, I've never really looked at this one up close in pictures. I just see it moving in a film, but there's just so many interesting textiles to this. You could tell that this one they spent a lot of attention on, unlike some of the other costumes. This was like a costume designed piece, if you know what I'm saying.
It's also interesting that it's not finished in terms of the design. So if you look at it like completely laid out, the motif repeats, I believe, 5 times, but the 2 in the front are cut off. So they're not fully finished, mm-hmm. which I found interesting. It's like, why not finish it? Did they make them too big and then it, you know, looked odd on Carrie, or why was it not the full image? And then also throughout the entire costume is rose gold piping.
Oh,
down the center, around the hem, like, and it has a loose hem. It doesn't have a closed hem, which is also interesting, but it allows for that flow when she walks, which is so pretty.
Absolutely. I also loved how they kind of very much late still made this a Leia look, which is like kind of like the more like tunic-y dress and like pants underneath it. Because in the script, Lucas wrote that she changed into a beautiful dress. So it's like, he was thinking like, oh, they kind of like, I felt like originally the idea was like, oh, like put her in like a pretty dress because she's a princess and like they'll like trap her there. But I like that they went more in the direction of like, no, this is still Leia. Like she can still like snap into action at any moment.
She can wear pants.
Yeah. You can wear pants and be beautiful.
Yes.
Right. And they just drove the Millennium Falcon out of the mouth of a giant like asteroid worm. So I don't think she was like, I need to put on a cute sundress, you know? Like,
yeah.
This just makes more sense to me.
Absolutely. Who was definitely not putting on a beautiful dress was Luke.
That was a cool transition.
Thank you. While this look went through many different versions, they settled on a basic combat suit as just being the most versatile look for what they needed. Originally envisioned as a jumpsuit, the final version was created as a pant and jacket set with Velcro added to the top of the pants and bottom of the jacket so it would not ride up during fighting sequences. Because of the many stages of distressing that were required, roughly 16 multiples were produced for this one look.
So they are doing multiples. Interesting.
They are. But this, like, it is falling off him by the end of this movie.
Yeah, it really goes through a lot.
I mean, they had to make one with no forearm because...
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I wonder why. That's a good actually like note to think about how one day we're like, okay, well, we got to cut all the sleeves off, you know.
We got to weather it slightly. But I also love, if you look at these pictures of him in it, how high those pants must be on him. Because I know the Velcro has to keep it, but look at where they end, where his belt is, and then they keep going up.
Oh, yes. That's why I had just always thought that this was a jumpsuit. Because with the Velcro, it just looks like a jumpsuit.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
But I like it because then you can, you know, if it's yours, you can wear the jacket on its own and be instantly recognizable. But also, you know.
I should have, like, realized sooner that this was a two-piece outfit. Because now that, like, I'm thinking about it, when he's on the planet, he wears these pants and like just like a tank top a lot of the time. But I never put two and two together.
So it's a pretty new movie. We're learning about it. You know?
Just came out. have not seen it too many times to count.
Yeah.
And lastly, but certainly not least, we have Yoda voiced by Frank Oz. I think one of the most favorite Jedi in the universe.
I love Yoda, and I love these concept sketches we're looking at because he is.
Yes.
I mean, he was looking extra Yoda-y in the concept sketches.
He was also looking almost Disney-esque in some of these, like the blue and the top on the left.
Yeah. He was originally supposed to be a Smurf, it looks like, but not positive.
Well, what Johnson and McQuarrie were working off the script where Yoda is described as a wizened little thing dressed in rags. So that's what they drew, I guess.
Yeah, well, and that's where we were.
And while the puppet for Yoda was created by Stuart Freeborn and his staff, Mallow still had the job of dressing Yoda. And he took a cue from Ben Kenobi's wardrobe and created just a basic brown tunic and a raw silk kimono for Yoda and just distressed it to look as aged as possible.
For all these years, I had no idea that a costume designer designed a costume for Yoda. That's really cool. I guess I don't know who dressed him before, so that was really cool.
It makes sense, though, but it's kind of funny now that we have Grogu, you know, like with armor and all this other stuff. Yeah. It's like poor Yoda just had one rag.
One rag to walk around in.
Brown potato sack, Yoda. Enjoy. But so kimono, I mean, that's kind of nice, Yoda.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It, when it was made, it was excellent. The best the Jedi could offer.
Gotta leave Coruscant, man. Order 66 was coming down.
Yeah.
Yep. He had no time to pack. But with that, we have come to the end of The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, such a good film. I mean, it's one of the best. It never gets old. I could watch this a million thousand times. And here we are still learning new things about it. So it's the gift that keeps on giving.
It's so funny. I have a friend who has an Empire Strikes Back Darth Vader costume, because obviously Vader's costume changes every movie. And I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember. It's been so long. But I asked him, I said, why Empire? Why not Jedi? Why not the New Hope? You know, why Empire Darth Vader? And he said, come on, it's like perfect movie. Dude has son, goes out, son comes back, son tries to kill me. I cut off his hand. It's perfect. Like
it is. It's a beautiful family film.
Absolutely.
All right.
And it really is like peak Darth Vader, because to me, I feel like he's at his like best in this film until honestly Rogue One. Like, this is the coolest Darth Vader appearance to me. So are you ready to play our favorite game?
Yes.
Now you know how the rules. You know how the rules go, right? Daniel, hit the track.
The one costume to rule them all.
Okay. I will go first, actually. My favorite costume, we didn't really talk about a lot, but that's because we have a lot of fun scenes coming up for this guy in the future. But I just love the Boba Fett armor. Just the first time you see him, just standing there, barely saying a word, not doing much, walking. But just the mystery of seeing Boba Fett, you just know, like, ooh, this guy's dangerous. But what is that armor? It's so different, unique, but then also kind of reminiscent to the stormtroopers. It just, to me, had a lot of like storytelling in it that was yet to explore. And that's like so exciting in terms of costume design. It really had to do a lot of the work, actually, for Boba Fett. So definitely my one costume to rule them all. But I will say that the Wumpa costume really jumped up there at the end. I mean, I just didn't even know that existed. Honestly, if I knew that before we started, that probably would have been my one costume.
I agree. And I love what you say that like the costume had to do a lot of work. Cause I guess like at this point, like the Mandalorians aren't a thing. And it's almost like they developed that whole like Star Wars culture from this look, mm-hmm. from this costume.
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, I'm not going to speak for George Lucas, but you know,
I have a lot more respect for this costume now that I've made Cobb Vanth, just because it's a lot of those pieces. But one interesting fact that I don't know if you know, he's wearing a scuba harness. I think it's what it's called, under to hold the jetpack.
Oh,
lovely. Yeah. So there's a whole harness thing involved that they have to wear. And then the jetpack hooks on in invisible openings at the top to keep it in place. That thing is really heavy, actually.
I'm sure. I mean, it always seems to go wrong and twirl into pits and stuff. So,
yeah, but I agree. It's a really fun costume.
Yeah. Elizabeth, what is your one costume rule them all?
My one costume to rule them all is Leia's Hoth look. And really just her primary look for this film. Like we said before, like it's elegant. She's gorgeous in it, but also like she can kick your ass as soon as she needs to. And it is like one of her most iconic looks. So that is my one costume to rule them all.
Yeah. I mean, when I think of Princess Leia, I tend to think of this look, not the look we're going to see in the next film. You know, I think of this look. And Natalie, last but not least, the grand finale. What is your one costume to rule them all?
There were so many good ones. It was really hard because I love them all. But I have to go with her Cloud City, Princess Leia's Cloud City maroon outfit. Just the pantsuit with the beautiful cape, cloak, coat thing, however you want to call it, over it. Her hairstyle is so iconic. Like you could just have that hairstyle and nothing else and people will know Star Wars right away. She looks beautiful. She looks, you know, gorgeous, hot. And she's not showing any skin, like the epitome of class, elegance, all rolled into one. And it's a beautiful color. And it's just stunning. So my one costume to rule them all is that one.
It's a solid one. I honestly gained a lot of appreciation for it. I never really got too many close up looks. So between Natalie and Elizabeth, I mean, this is definitely killer costume.
Absolutely. And if you want to tell us what your one costume to rule them all is, you can leave us a little voicemail at 626-515-1826 or email us at theartofcostumeblogcast@gmail.com.
Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you to Natalie for joining us. This was so fun.
Thank you.
We love your insight and we hope to have you on again in the future because you have so much fun costume knowledge. You seem to know things that are just random and specific, which is why I'm obsessed with you.
Thank you, my friend.
I could not stop staring at the measuring tape thing once you brought it up. I was like kind of tuned out the whole time. I just kept staring.
Now you're going to go get your measuring tape and be like, Yeah.
Spray paint.
Where can all of our listeners follow you?
I'm most active on Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram. On Instagram, I'm Leia Aurora, like Princess Leia, because she's my favorite princess. So Leia Aurora. And then on TikTok, it would be Leia Aurora 14. So the number 14. And on Twitter, it's Movie Lover for Life.
Nice. Nice. It's so good that you have that memorized. Thank you again so much for joining us. And Elizabeth, next episode, we are going to continue the Star Wars theme. We're taking a deep dive into all three seasons of The Mandalorian. So make sure you all go and catch up on the final, well, not final, on the last few episodes of season three. So good. If you haven't seen it, definitely worth the watch. It ended strong. And until then, follow us on Instagram at The Art of Costume Pod, TikTok at The Art of Costume, merch store at theartofcostume.com/podstore. And don't forget to leave us a 5-star text review on Apple Podcasts because it really does help. And finally, may the force be with you.
May the force be with you.
And also with you.
Thank you, everyone.
The Art of Costume blogcast is hosted and produced by Elizabeth Joy Glass and Spencer Williams. Our audio engineering and editing is done by Dan White. Follow us on Instagram at The Art of Costume Pod or visit theartofcostumeblogcast.com for all blogcast updates. If you want to support the show, go to theartofcostume.com/podstore. For more costume reviews, deep dives, and interviews, head over to theartofcostume.com, a blog dedicated to highlighting the best in costume design.
Did either of you play Star Wars Battlefront, the game? Mm. No, just me. Ugh, the Hoth levels used to be the best. I know people listening are like, oh, yeah, I love that game. Anyways.
I only ever played Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay. Yeah. I guess I'm the only gamer. Whatever.
No, I'm a huge gamer, but I'm an extremely competitive gamer, even with myself, in so much it's addictive. And then it becomes my whole life. So I purposely stepped back.
Oh, okay. You're like, we shouldn't even talk about it. It's going to.